Today is Shabbat Nachamu, which means the Sabbath of Comfort. It's the first of seven Sabbaths in which the Haftarah reading is dedicated to comforting the Jewish people after the destruction of the temple, which we observed last Sunday, Saturday and Sunday, which I'll explain in a moment. We were in Israel last week with my family. It was a once-in-a-lifetime trip since my older son, Timothy, along with all of his family, flew with us to visit his younger brother, our younger son, Jonathan, with all of his family. The 12 of us wandered around Israel in two vans. Just realize it was 12 of us. 12 of us in Israel. I just realized that. 12 of us. Oh my. What a number. For about 10 days we were wandering around. One person who saw our itinerary noted that they hadn't seen tour groups that accomplished as much as our little group did. We went everywhere. It was also a work trip for us. We had to go to places to visit them to make sure that they were fit for the tours that, you know, Sherry has a business arranging tours to Israel, as you all know. So we had to go to places like, you know, the David Resort and Spa at the Dead Sea and, explore that hotel, comped completely all three rooms so that we could make sure that it was fit for future tours to come and be a part of. It was tough. Everywhere we went, frankly, we were treated as VIPs. Getting into many places without paying. Sorrel provided the passes that you need for national tour sites, national places, and we went to every place pretty much without paying. They covered all the national parks. They also loaned us a van, which we are very grateful for, and we're singing the praises of Sorrel. They loaned us a van. It was clear that the rental van that we had arranged was not going to work. We picked it up, it was already broken, and Sorrel even paid for the gas the whole time we traveled around. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment right there. We never had any incidents, we never had any threats. We felt perfectly safe the entire time, except whenever Josh and Rafi were arguing, but aside from that, but they cramming six grandkids all in the same place for 10 days was sometimes a little challenging, but it was great for them. They got to know each other. They loved each other. And when we announced that we were getting ready to leave, all the kids were sad, and so were we. The last weekend we were there, last weekend actually, was Tisha B'Av. The actual date of Tisha B'Av is the 9th of Av, which was last Saturday. But when it falls on a Sabbath, the fast is observed on the following day. So Sunday was the fast. On that Sunday, we traveled to Tel Aviv. I noticed that many of the popular places seemed less active. I would have expected more people for a nice weekend in Israel. I would have expected more traffic. I was fasting, but I did take water. You have to be careful of your health when you're in Israel. There's a tendency to get dehydrated. I did take water. At one point, I actually had an iced coffee to help relieve the caffeine headache. So much for becoming addicted to coffee. It's not all it's cut out to be. But the coffee was purchased at Max Brenner's, a restaurant where a terror attack had occurred at the Sarona Mall in Tel Aviv. There was no wait to get a table there. I could see how a couple of terrorists dressed nicely could walk in, get a table, and do whatever they wanted to do. We had no problems. We had a wonderful trip, one that is not likely to be duplicated in our lifetimes. Meanwhile, on this Shabbat, Shabbat Nachamu, we hear words of comfort from our Haftarah reading. Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak comfort to Jerusalem, and cry out to her that her warfare is ended, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. This week I saw a live telecast by Bob Mendelsohn, director of Jews for Jesus in Australia. How many of you know that Bob used to be director of Jews for Jesus here in Washington, D.C.? Did anybody know that? He was. This was a while back. Bob and I know each other because he used to host meetings at the Jews for Jesus offices for area messianic leaders. That's how I got to know a number of the leaders in this area. Bob's broadcast was a teaching on Isaiah 53, of all things. Why would he want to teach on that particular chapter, of all things? According to the content of his video, he had been teaching from each chapter of Isaiah up until this point, and this just happened to be the time frame of teaching on Isaiah 53. So presumably he'd been teaching all the way up through chapter 52. In the video, Bob showed how he had divided Isaiah into two parts, consisting of chapters 1 through 39, and the other part from 40 to the end of the book. How many people know how many chapters there are in Isaiah? Okay, I see a few people who know how many chapters there are. There are 66. 66 chapters in Isaiah. How many people know how many books there are in the Bible? Some people know that there are 66. Interesting coincidence. In the Tanakh, there are 39 chapters. And in the New Covenant writings, there are 27 chapters together. That's 66. So 66 chapters in Isaiah, 66 books in the Bible. Some people have taken this as a way of reading Isaiah, that as we read through Isaiah, we are also in a way comparing the books of the Bible. To do that, you have to actually take the first 39 chapters of Isaiah and the 39 chapters of the Tanakh and realign the Tanakh according to the Jewish order. But that's okay, you can do that. It's done in the Complete Jewish Bible for us by David Stern. So Bob pointed out that starting in chapter 40, Isaiah takes a sharp turn, a sharp turn. Instead of prophecies pertaining to the consequences of Israel's sin and the sins of the surrounding nations, the tone changes, and chapter 40 begins with words of comfort to the Jewish people. It's an interesting parallel. Chapter 40 and the 40th book of the Bible would be Matthew. Chapter 40, words of comfort. Matthew, words of comfort to the Jewish people. Not to be taken over seriously, not to drain this parallel too much, but it's interesting nonetheless. And speaking of interesting, if you take the last 27 chapters of Isaiah, which would, in this sense, correspond to the 27 chapters of the new, is it 27 or 20, 27, right? 27, okay. 27 chapters of the New Testament writings or the New Covenant writings. If you take those 27 chapters and find the middle chapter, does anyone know what chapter you get? The middle chapter of the last 27 of Isaiah, the middle of the last chapter. So let's see, 39 minus 66 is 27. So that'd be the 13 and a half added to 39. Oh, 53. Isaiah 53 is the middle chapter. Interesting. Okay. So he wanted to draw that analogy. And that's the chapter that he was teaching on. And showing why the suffering servant could not be understood, as modern Jewish commentators often say, that Isaiah 53 is not about Jesus. It's about the Jewish people. And that's what modern commentators say. But ancient commentators, before Rashi, said, no, this is a chapter about the Messiah. And so we'll take the ancient ways, restore unto us as of days of old. So, In any case, there is a theme of comfort here in Isaiah and in the Haftorot of the next 6 weeks. And the day after the seventh Sabbath of comfort is what day? Rosh Hashanah. Not a coincidence. The timing of these things is not accidental. In reading through the Torah cycle and the accompanying cycle of Haftorah readings, We as a Jewish people are rehearsing annually the cycle of feasts, other major events that remind us of who we are as a people. The selection of our Torah reading today was also not an accident, saying that God calls us Am Segula, a special people or a treasured people. We are a special treasure above all the peoples on the face of the earth. This is the Torah portion where we could have read from, for example, Moses is pleading with God to be allowed to enter the land. We could have read from the list of the 10 words or the 10 commandments, because that's in this Torah portion as well. We could have read, as I heard one person point out, from the Shema and the Vi'ahavta, because that's in this Torah portion as well. But because I was the gabbai and I got to choose what I wanted to read, we read what we read, which is that the Jewish people are a special treasure, Am Segula, a special people before all the people, all the nations on the face of the earth. Sometimes we wonder, as Tevye, how many people know who Tevye is? The main character, Fiddler on the Roof, right? The play or the musical created by, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Ash, or who? Shalom Aleichem, I believe, right? This musical, Tevye, the Fiddler on the Roof, says, why couldn't he choose someone else? So it's a big mystery for many of us who are looking at our chosenness and wondering if it's really such a great thing to be chosen, because there's so many consequences to being chosen. It doesn't even seem fair to be chosen. We don't deserve to be chosen. And he says in this Torah portion, no, that's right, you don't. You don't deserve to be chosen. You're not greater than any of the nations on the face. But because I love you, he said, because I love you, I chose you. Because I love you and because you are a special treasure to me. So there's something really unique about being Jewish, but sometimes it means having to endure some things that are not so great to endure. It's like a curse sometimes. Everything that the Jewish people do is observed through a microscope. Every wrong thing that is done is blown up, broadcast, criticized, condemned. How can you, a Jew, do such a thing as put Arabs in camps where they're not free, not able to make a living for themselves? How can you, a Jew, show anger toward people who are only trying to have what every other people has and wants to have? Their own land, their own culture. In other words, the standards applied to Israel and the Jewish people seem to be higher than the standards people apply to any other nation or people group. The same is also true for Christians. If a national political figure gets divorced or brags about sexual conquests, he can still become a U.S. president. Maybe. But if a major religious leader in a Christian church or denomination becomes tempted and damages his marriage, he is cast aside and his livelihood is jeopardized. Maybe that's as it should be. There are reasons for this, but sometimes it's hard to be a public figure when you're standing up for the standards of Scripture. Israel has paid double for her sins. Why is that significant? Because that was the promise, or you might say the curse, that God spoke to Israel, to his people, concerning her future, if and when she turns away from him and starts to commit idolatry, disobeys him, makes idols. In this case, it's referring to the Sabbaths of the land. How is Israel paid double for her sins with regard to the Sabbath? See, Israel was put into exile in order to allow the land to observe its rest, its Sabbaths. Israel had not observed the agricultural Sabbaths of the Shemitah, the land being required to rest every 7 years. In order to restore the land, Israel was removed and the land rested, and Israel thereby paid double for her sins over that period of time. If you do the math, you will find that the days of paying for the sin against the Shemitah ended around the time that the state of Israel was created in 1948, 2 years before I was born. Some people think that the Great Tribulation of Luke 21 and Matthew 24, also spoken of in Daniel, is something that has yet to occur. But that tribulation is the tribulation of the Jewish people. He says, 77s are determined for your people, Daniel. So 77s, 490 years, are determined for your people. So this is for the people of Daniel. That this is the time. And it began with the destruction of the temple in 70 CE, the Common Era, and came to an end in 1967 of the Common Era with the reunification of Jerusalem, 1968. The times of the Gentiles are nearly fulfilled, and it appears that the time for Israel to be restored as a kingdom are beginning to dawn. The set time to favor Zion has come, and the wrath of the Lord in judgment of the nations is about to occur. We see in Scripture that the nations will be aligned against Israel before the time that the arm of the Lord is revealed. We can see that happening. We see that the people will tremble at the sight of armies aligned against Israel on her borders. I saw an article yesterday about ISIS troops building up near the Syrian-Israeli border and the IDF keeping a careful eye on them. I don't think they're there to attack, but it's just their internal struggle there, ISIS in Syria and what's going on there, that they wind up that close. But the IDF is watching. World opinion has gone back and forth with regard to Israel. It wasn't until terrorists began to attack European cities and American targets that Europe and America began to recognize that the threats that Israel has been fighting for years are threats to all of Western civilization. Benjamin Netanyahu said, "We are doing this for you." He said that to Europe. He said that to America. "We are fighting this war for you." So at least for now, some sympathy is increasingly existing toward Israel. That could go away. There's even legislation starting to be passed against the BDS movement, the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, which is an anti-Jewish movement trying to coerce Israel into surrendering land to create a Palestinian state. So maybe they think that the problems in the Middle East are that Israel has too much land. when the BDS movement fails to recognize, what they fail to recognize is that Israel would be perfectly happy to surrender land to create a Palestinian state if it meant that Israel could receive some guarantee of peace and safety from attacks. History shows otherwise, however. The unilateral surrender of Gaza, in which Israel unilaterally removed 10,000 Jewish residents and turned the whole tract of land over to the Palestinian Authority with no guarantees or promises, just gave it to them, resulted in thousands of rockets being launched at Israeli civilian targets. Okay, so this is the time to favor Zion? I believe it is. I believe that Christianity, though it's still struggling with its desire to see BDS go forward, it's still struggling in many places with supersessionism and moral equivalency, and still trying to wrap its understanding around whether to align with the Jewish people, that Christianity is increasingly a friend to the Jewish people. And the Jewish people see this, especially right-wing evangelical Christianity, which doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of Jewish people why that would be the case. I frequently tell my commercial, and I've told it here, and I will retell it since I think it is so important, whenever I speak before groups regarding the Passover demonstrations or anything else, I always talk to Christian groups. I say that when will the Jewish people as a body say Baruch Haba B'Shem Adonai? When will the Messiah return? When the Jewish people say, "Blessed is he that comes in the name of the Lord." When will the Jewish people say this? I believe it happens as a direct action of the greater church world. When Christians embrace the Jewish people and say we love you. We are with you. We will not forsake you. Our love is unconditional. If there's anything you need, and we have it, it's yours. If they come against you, they will have to go through us. And when the greater church world does this and fulfills this promise, then the hearts of Jewish people will be prepared to receive the revelation that the most famous Jew that ever lived, Jesus, whom Messianics call Yeshua, Jesus is the Messiah. He is the one from God who comes to take away the sins of the world and of his people in particular. He is Mashiach ben Yosef, the Messiah, the son of Joseph, who, like Joseph, will stand among his brethren and declare, Ani Yeshua, I am Yeshua, your brother, whom you thought to kill and whom you rejected, but I forgive you. For what you intended for evil, God intended for good, that I might go before you and prepare a place. And in your time of trouble, I have come to reveal to you the provision from heaven that is for you. Unlike Joseph, who was able to give the proceeds of Pharaoh's storehouses, I give you the wealth of the nations, and I will fight for you, and you will prevail against all your enemies. I will judge those who sought to kill you. I will strike them, and they will not recover. For I have come to restore the throne of God and to reestablish my rule on the earth. Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and lowly of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Therefore, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear, lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed, the gospel was preached to us as well as to them. But the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter that rest, as he has said, so I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience, again he designates a certain day, saying in David, today, after such a long time, as it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works, as God did from his. On the Sabbath, we cease from our labors. We practice entering into his rest. It's a practice for entering into the millennial reign of the Messiah, when he will establish rest for the nation of Israel and for all the nations who come to serve him. On this Shabbat Nachamu, be comforted in knowing that the day is coming when he will dry every tear, and there will be no more crying or sorrow. There will be no more death or killing. The nations will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Be comforted that there is nothing that you need to strive for, since the rest that he has prepared for us is complete. And it requires nothing except that we love him and trust him and allow our hearts to follow him. Be comforted today, for sins have been paid for and life is poured out to all who will receive. Amen. Elders, come forward.